I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Dealing with pests can be a pain, but relax, Terminix can help.
Because when pests show up, so does Terminix.
With over 95 years of experience, they have what it takes to take on any pest problem fast.
If your home or business has pests, don't stress it.
Terminix it.
Visit Terminix.com to book your appointment online today.
That's TERMINIX.com.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Paul Mission Control Deccant. Most importantly, you are you. You are here. And that makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. Folks, whether you are listening to this at the beginning of your day or the end of your day or night, you could probably identify with a situation common to everybody. You just got home, you did some big stuff, and you're starving, but the last thing you want to do is cook. It's like a whole other job.
But Ben, what if I ordered something and had it delivered to me, waited upon hand and foot, like we did during the pandemic? That could continue indefinitely, right?
Yeah, so what would you do in this hypothetical situation? And, you know, if you're like millions of people every year in the U.S. alone, you order delivery. Until pretty recently, our options would be fairly limited in this regard. But now, as we record, there is an entire industry built only around bringing your favorite restaurant to your door, ... for a price. The problem is, some of these restaurants may not be what they seem. Behold, fellow conspiracy realist, the rise of the ghost kitchen. Here are the facts.
I just want to put it out there. I think there's a third option, everybody. Either cooking your own food, ordering out, or option number three, cereal.
Cereal.
That's true. I just remember that being an option quite a bit in my college days.
My girlfriend likes to dine on what she calls square snacks, which are like cheese slices in the little plastic cellophane, and like Ritz, which is round, or particularly saltines, which are square. So that's also an option. But it's true,
Ben. Oh, yeah. The internet calls it girl dinner.
Girl dinner comes in all shapes and sizes. That's like a meme that I haven't quite cracked.
It's a meme mean.
Ben, you nailed it. This is a thing. And I mentioned the pandemic because I think, you know, one of the pluses of the pandemic, if it can be referred to as that, is that we all kind of felt like we had this extended vacation. And after a little period of time where we weren't completely terrified of touching anything from the outside world, ordering in from Uber Eats or DoorDash or Seamless or Postmates or any number of these services, kind of became a thing that we relied on. And dare I say, some of us kind of probably figured it more into our lives post-pandemic than we would have if that event had not taken place.
Yeah. I mean, even before the pandemic, Checkers was right. Checkers, perhaps the most philosophical of fast food joints in the States, said, you got to eat. People have always had to do it. Access to food is still one of the guiding factors of all human civilization. People love food. And additionally, people love convenience, even before the pandemic. So it's no surprise these two primal drives would intersect. I actually
I was talking a little bit with our friends at Station 16 who have done some excellent social media videos with us. They love weird facts. And quite recently, we learned that the modern roots of food delivery in the West started back in the late 1800s. A pair of Italian royals in 1889 became the world's first pizza delivery customers. So shout out to King Umberto and Queen Margherita. Can you guess what kind of pizza they had delivered?
Pepperoni?
Close. Margherita. They got a margherita pizza.
Yeah, and I swear I've seen a pizza chain, if not a chain, definitely a handful of one-offs called Umberto's.
Mm.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a coincidence. You know me and my reaching and grasping at etymological straws, but it's certainly possible.
It's weird, though, right? Because I for some reason, I was on the fence. I imagined the predecessor of food delivery would be much, much older or much more recent. But turns out 1889. And ever since then, food and food delivery has sort of mirrored these larger historical trends. Wars affect how food is delivered. They affect the way food is preserved, right? And if it weren't for Napoleon, we might not have canned food. The technological advances, shifting forms of labor rights and so on, they all determine how and when people order stuff to eat at home. The most amazing thing happened just a year later in 1890. Have you guys heard of Dabawala or Dabawala?
New to me.
Yeah, no, new to me too. Just really quickly, Umberto's pizza chain in New York State and New York City, like maybe like 12 or 13 of them, but I wasn't just making that up. No, tell us about the Mumbai Dabawala service. I know about the Chaiwalas, you know, which is a very popular, you know, dispensation kind of method of chai tea in train stations. And that became very sort of a national sort of identity factor for India. But tell me about the Dabawalas.
Yeah, Dabawala dates back to 1890. It's the very first massive meal delivery service, the very first meal delivery system en masse, and it occurs under British colonialism in India. Here's what happened. Tons and tons of people moved to Mumbai, which was then called Bombay. They would leave for work extremely early in the morning, and they would work all day and into the night. They didn't have time to dine out. And so with all these hungry people flooding the city, a guy named Mahadeo Havaji Bachache, pardon our pronunciation, figured this out. He said, let me get a small army of dudes to deliver food. And these delivery men became known as Dabawalas, which translates to the one who carries a box. And if you ever want to have an interesting lunchbox, check out Tiffin's, T-I-F-F-I-N. They're super cool. I keep trying to rationalize buying one. But this service is so successful delivering food that it booms. It feeds hundreds of thousands of people on a daily basis and continues to do so during the rise of food delivery apps. This system, by the way, is so sophisticated and so accurate that management companies study it for guidance. Their error rate is something like one in X million.
Reminds me of the way the British cabbies have to study those crazy routes and maps and take that test called the knowledge.
Hmm. Well, let's get back. Okay, so that's an amazing like alteration into how food can get to you and your family, right? That's a huge change. It's amazing. And then fast forward to just us growing up. When you guys were growing up, the only food that ever got delivered to my house was a pizza or from whatever pizza chain they would deliver. And like a Chinese food restaurant basically would come to me. I think there may have been an Indian restaurant like that was a little bit further away, but like they wouldn't come to my house. Basically,
did you guys have steakout? Remember steakout?
No.
Their whole thing was that they were a steak delivery place. They would deliver burgers and steaks and, you know, kind of their whole gimmick was, it was the kind of stuff you typically have to go to a, you know, sit down restaurant for. But that, the fact that that could even be a business model kind of gimmick shows your point that there really were very few options. And I always think of Chinese restaurants as kind of cornering the market on delivery for a very long time.
Because they would hire specific staff, right, at a restaurant to do their deliveries. That was it. That's what they worked for. That's how they got money, tips through that single restaurant.
Mm-hmm. Like pizza delivery mm-hmm. workers as well. And this is also the age of the frozen food delivery truck, where there would be, I can't remember the different names of them, but these guys would drive through neighborhoods similar to ice cream vans. And they would deliver like a month's worth of frozen, you know, microwave meals. But you might be interested to find, Matt, that we have a returning guest in tonight's story, the notorious consulting firm McKinsey. McKinsey agrees with you, Matt. They say that just a little less than two decades ago, if you wanted delivery, with notable exceptions like your example, steakout and all, most people in the U.S., if they were able to get delivery, they would get something from a Chinese restaurant, or they would get pizza delivered. It became normalized. And now that is no longer the case. The food delivery industry has, as of just like 3 years ago, it was worth more than $150 billion. And that price is the result of a triple digit growth since 2017. And then it was already doing gangbusters before the COVID-19 pandemic hit. It was growing about 8% a year. And then everything changed because you couldn't go places, right? Or you didn't want to go places. You risked exposing yourself and your loved ones to a very dangerous pathogen. So now we're in the current situation where in the US alone, 60% of people order delivery or get some takeaway at least once a week. And I don't know about you guys, but in the interest of transparency, I'm probably among that number. I cook a lot, but not every single day of the week.
I think I love to cook as well, but I admittedly do delivery minimum two times a week, like complete transparency. No question about it. Sometimes more.
Well, I'll just be the minor outlier. I've pretty much stopped unless I don't have time to make food for my son after, like, for instance, after we're recording or something and there's not enough time between bedtime and me, you know, stopping recording with you guys, then I will maybe do a DoorDash or something.
But so that it arrives like right when you're done. The timing exactly. is really helpful for that too.
Exactly. I don't know if you guys ever seen me pull my phone up like as right as we're finishing an episode, but it's because I kind of have to do it, or else it's not going to happen.
Thing for those lifestyle, you know, necessities. It's also a great crutch for lazy people. It's probably more my deal, but yeah.
But just to the point, Ben, I think it is so. It can't be understated how much the fear of catching some potentially scary thing was, and how much that pushed all of us, globally, humanity, to move in this direction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And right now, the online delivery business is projected to reach $1 trillion by 2030. That's assuming another pandemic spike doesn't occur. If another global crisis like the pandemic spikes again, then that number is going to be much, much higher. I think the way I put it was a pandemic spike could put some real stank on those numbers, but that's perhaps a big
yeah.
It reminds me too of the way like it's become really difficult to get people to fully commit to going back to the office, because that whole trend just was so, you know, hammered into us, the whole work from home thing. People are kind of want to give it up. So it becomes this whole negotiation with employers where it's like, well, if you come into the office a couple of days a week, we'll give you free snacks or something, because, you know, it's hard to turn back the clock when people make these big life changes.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. And no, obviously, for anybody who tuned into our previous episode, you know that McKinsey is a source with, let's say, an angle. They have a goal. Their research is solid, though. They point to the pandemic's effect on food service, and they say, you know, check it out. Restaurants that once upon a time would never serve takeout they found themselves relying on it to keep their business afloat. And companies like DoorDash, Grubhub, Uber Eats, and so on, et cetera, et al., they flourished during this time. Though, to be absolutely fair, we cannot necessarily say the same about the drivers working for those companies.
Mm. Yeah, and this is, you know, a pretty deep topic, you know, because obviously you see there's so much wrapped into it from very recent history. So this might be the first in sort of a mini series of episodes. But for now, let's leave the history stuff there largely, and let's move on to this. If you live in a developed country and have a disposable income, let's call it, although sometimes it's just, you know, this, you have to eat, to your point about checkers, Ben, it's just a matter of like, what options do you have? How much are you going to spend? Can you afford to have this delivered right to your door? So if you do have the means to pay that extra fee, all sorts of restaurants are at your disposal to wait upon you hand and foot. Everything from, you know, fast food restaurants like Checkers to literal fine dining. A lot of these really nice places are supplementing their income by, you know, having a delivery component. Some places totally are like, no, we don't do that. That's not, we don't have the personnel. And that, we should get into that a little bit too later. I'm sure you will. It's about how much personnel this takes and how much of a tax it can put on the people making the food. That's obviously a big part of this episode. But you can call a restaurant directly, sure. And honestly, a lot of places would ask that you do that, because if you use a go-between like an Uber Eats or whatever, there are fees involved and the restaurant's having to pay out some of their, you know, their profits to these third party services. So people typically don't really do that. They use these apps. But often if you search for a type of food, whatever you might want, it's there. And then you just wait. And frankly, depending on what neighborhood you live in, what part of the world you live in, it could have come pretty absurdly quick.
But with all that being true, tonight's question dives into something that might surprise a lot of us listening along at home. Where do all these restaurants come from when you search for a genre of cuisine? Like you say, I want some pho, and there's a pho restaurant that you've never heard of, but they can get it to you in 35 minutes. Who are these people? What the heck is a ghost kitchen? I suggest we pause for a word from our sponsors, maybe a quick snack break, and then continue to explore, because God, it's such a cool name. Ghost Kitchen?
Yeah.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This episode is brought to you by Terminix.
Terminix can't help you solve the world's biggest mysteries or take on alien life.
At least not the ones you're thinking of. But they can help take care of pesky invaders in your home.
Like the ants in your kitchen, the roaches under your sink, and the termites in the walls.
Because when pests show up, so does Terminix.
No matter what type of pest it is, they can Terminix it fast with personalized pest care that puts you in control.
Their expertly trained technicians may not know true crime, but they know their local pest pressures.
And with customized plans tailored to your specific situation, you get everything you need to not just get pests out, but keep them out for good.
Between their speedy service, caring technicians, and over 95 years of experience, it's no mystery why they're trusted by homes and businesses everywhere.
So if you have a pest problem, don't stress it. Terminix it.
Visit Terminix.com to book your appointment online today.
That's TERMINIX.com to book online today.
Here's where it gets crazy. We've talked about this one a little bit off air, and maybe I think we mention it in a strange news or listener mail segment, but a great way to get into this phenomenon is a Reddit thread from 2020 in Philadelphia. Shout out to Reddit user Kendall Neff, who ordered what she thought was pizza from a local Philly restaurant called Pasquale's.
Yeah, this is one you brought. I think, Ben, you brought this up, or one of you guys brought this up, and I was like, what is Pasquale's? And you guys were like, oh, let me tell you. But isn't it the idea where you're just you're in one of these apps and you find a place that looks to be pretty nearby, you order what you think is a local pizza?
Well, and Pasquale's certainly has the ring of truth to it in terms of, like, you know, local Philly type fare. I mean, I think one of the most popular Philly places is called Pequod's. But then there's also like a cheesesteak type place with names like that. It has that sort of, you know, oh, this seems legit, right?
Yeah, it's Philly is famous for having restaurants where it's some guy's name, right? So this pizza and wing joint passes that sniff test. And our friend from Reddit, she gets her food delivered and she texts the driver afterwards, after the delivery succeeds. And she says, quote, also just curious, was this food from Chuck E. Cheese? The driver replies and says, this was the Chuck E. Cheese store, but the windows had the wing restaurant on them. I was curious too.
Oh, geez.
LMAO.
Well, first of all, what tipped her off to ask the driver that question? I'm curious there. She was already suspicious before it even arrived.
Let me just say, I think we all know a Chuck E. Cheese pizza when we've tasted a Chuck E. Cheese pizza one time.
Yeah.
Taste it
like
again.
School lunch pizza. Vibes.
Yeah, exactly. I'm with you there, Matt, because it turns out our pal Charles Entertainment has been using some burner identities. Pasquale is the name of the chef in the Chuck E. Cheese extended universe.
And what kind of animal is he? Is he human?
He's a party animal, bro. If you go,
pizza party animal.
A pizza party animal, just so. And if you go to delivery websites across the U.S., you will see Pasquale's all over the place because there are a lot of Chuck E. Cheese's still. Check out our Ridiculous History series on the history of Charles Entertainment. And so people ask them about this. They ask Chuck E. Cheese about this.
He's kind like, of, no comment. Get out of here with that. Well,
this kind of name switcheroo is not, for the record, illegal. And they said, the following. They were talking to Business Insider, and one of their reps said, Pasquale's Pizza and Wings is a delivery-only premium pizza brand operating from Chuck E. Cheese kitchens. So DBA, doing business as.
Well, we also know Chuck E. Cheese has had some financial woes for a long time, and it was just exacerbated by the pandemic. So this makes a lot of sense, where they're like, holy crap, we've got this golden opportunity to, like, kind of trick people, but that do it in a way that's like not overtly bad until they get caught. I don't blame them exactly, but it's shady still, it seems. Don't you guys think?
Kind of, but
yeah, but I'm on the fence too.
They've got a commercial kitchen in every one of their locations. They're probably not cooking that much pizza for the kids that are running around doing all the gaming and stuff, right?
No, at Chuck E. Cheese's, right,
especially, like, during a pandemic.
This feels like a move because I can't imagine that you could capture a lot of the market share if you just said, hey, we're Chuck E. Cheese. We deliver
exactly.
Now.
Exactly. That's, I mean, right. you could say it's a willful deception, and there's some validity to that. But on the other hand, it is a smart and totally legal business move. Let's face it. Chuck does not have the most stellar rep amid pizza snobs. And right. Right. And, you know, it's whether or not you agree with the idea, folks, we might be surprised to learn Chucky E is not the only rat in the game here. Applebee's also delivers food under a sub-brand called Neighborhood Wings. Just Salad has another brand called Health Tribes. These are targeted, or at least Health Tribes is targeted at people with dietary restrictions. Doghouse has 8 other virtual brands. Companies love this stuff because all the food goes through the same health standards as any other restaurant. They are, to your point, Matt, they're just aware of pre-existing brand associations and the baggage that comes with that. So yeah. if you're already ordering something expensive, like Uber Eats is always going to be kind of expensive, then you might not want to say, I'll pay for Chuck E. Cheese. You might want to say, if I'm splurging, let me get something quality. Let me go Pascales. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about that just with Applebee's, because the Neighborhood Wings thing is a newer thing. And before they tried to call it Cosmic Wings and really put it off as though it was a whole separate thing. And then they had to shutter that whole side of the business and move it over to basically this thing, the Neighborhood Wings, or like if you go to the website, cosmicwings.com, I think that's what it is. Yeah. That for during the pandemic, that was a whole separate business that Applebee's was running, kind of without the Applebee's, but it was all from Applebee's.
But was it even like spins on Applebee's dishes? Do they, because I mean, so many Applebee's stuff, ask Paul, Mission Control is one of his favorite restaurants. They're kind of signature-y dishes, you know, like they mm-hmm. like, you know, what is it? Now I'm thinking of Chili's, but like for, let's take Chili's, for example, like Southwestern egg rolls. You'd see that on a menu for another place and be like, where have I heard of this before? Or were they like kind of masquerading the names of the dishes too, or maybe even just using the ingredients in different ways?
A little bit of all. Of all those approaches, depending on the venue or the outfit. And, you know, look, this is, to be clear, this was not some kind of crooked conspiracy to move like contaminated pizza or literal bad apples. Yeah. This was,
we have no proof of that.
We have no proof yet.
Gotta
right?
move these pies.
And of course, if that is the case, they'll never get in trouble because the franchise model is a hell of an argument in court. But these, so we're showing you that this is a very common practice. As a matter of fact, there is a non-zero chance that some of us listening this evening might have a new favorite restaurant from the pandemic. And guess what? It might be the IHOP up the street. Just gonna let you know, let's step out of Plato's Grubhub cavern here and be honest with each other.
It's so easy to get caught up in like brand stuff, you know, where it's like this place is known for having the best eggs in town. And that hype can kind of infiltrate your mind and your perceptions. And they might just be lightly seasoned scrambled eggs, but because you got it from X place that's got a reputation, it tastes better. So, you know, Pasquale's, you thinking that it's like, oh, I've discovered this new neighborhood joint, you in your mind might have these positive associations with something that you've definitely eaten before at a kid's birthday party.
We learned that. You guys remember we talked with, our friends at Savor talked with us one time about the perceptions of wine, right?
Mm-hmm. And oh, that's like a great analog for sure.
Just the price, the way the label looks, the environment in which you're enjoying it, like so much of the psychology behind the way your brain interprets that flavor. I think it's so strong here when it comes to the branding that you see when you're scrolling through potential food options.
Yeah, absolutely. Because taste, enjoyment of something you taste is weirdly similar to experiences on hallucinogens. Scene and setting and context play a huge role, even unto the color of the plate that your food is on, like a blue versus red plate. And this is weird. Also, the science behind sommelier practices, not as solid as we would all like to think. But in these cases, these are all established, often gigantic national brands, and they're wearing a fake mustache and some glasses to get into your house. But, you know, to serve you good food, they just don't want you to know it. That's actually Charles underneath the glasses and the trench coat. But there's something else that happened, and it's going to continue happening, probably. What if the restaurant you were ordering from isn't a physical restaurant at all. This is the rise of the ghost kitchen. And like we said before we went to the ad break, Ghost Kitchen is such a cool name. It should be the name of a band or an album. You know what I mean? I would listen to a mixtape. I would listen to DJ Khaled's Ghost Kitchen.
Yeah, it reminds me a lot of Ghost Guns, which is, you know, a similarly not untraceable, but I guess the idea here is that you don't know where it came from. And that's what a ghost gun is. It's like a gun where the provenance of it is kind of difficult to determine.
The other name for these, which I think is great too, I'm sure you guys saw this, is a dark kitchen.
Mm-hmm. Or delivery only kitchen. But dark kitchen and ghost kitchen are the two best.
Mm-hmm.
And one part of this that makes a lot of sense too is to get the most bang for your buck. If you're a business owner and you like have a kitchen, a commercial kitchen, maybe people aren't coming in and sitting down as much anymore. So maybe you have a lot of space and a lot of commercial kitchen equipment and implements. It's a great way to maximize the use of all of that and stay afloat, because we know the margins for restaurants are very narrow and that stuff's very expensive.
Oh man, just the regulations you have to follow to have a functional commercial kitchen in any given state, because they do vary by state here in the United States, at least. Like, it's not only is it money, it is effort. It is special. Like, you need to have somebody who knows what they're doing. Right?
Watch Gordon Ramsay Kitchen Nightmares, you know, to see just how quickly these things can fall apart and crumble into the ground.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And look, it's also tremendously expensive to open a traditional restaurant. It's crazy money, which is why a lot of times very talented chefs team up with someone who's essentially the money person, right? And they make all kinds of sacrifices on the way just to fit that bottom line. That's also why menus change depending, again, on broader sociological patterns. There's a method to the madness here. Each of these, we'll call them delivery kitchens. Let's call them ghost kitchens. Let's go with the cool name. Each of these, they're typically going to be located in areas where a lot of people order food delivered. So your favorite large or mid-size city in the U.S. almost definitely has a series of ghost kitchens now. It's never just one. And the kitchens themselves, they don't have like a big storefront. You can't roll up to one of these places that often looks like a warehouse and say, hey, let me get, you know, a number three, or let me get a mean chicken parm. They'll say, go to the app, sir, and order it to a different address. This is a virtual restaurant. It's a digital storefront, which means they save so much money, not just on real estate, but on front of house, on overhead, on all those other things that will just nickel and dime a traditional food joint to death.
It's almost like a digital version of the kind of pop-ups you see a lot of times, where a restaurant will allow a budding chef to use their kitchen or to use their space for an exclusive period of time or whatever.
Like a test kitchen.
A test, exactly. But like, you know, you it's an event. But like with this, you can kind of get your thing off the ground really quickly and test the waters. And I know a lot of places that probably start like this and then ease their way into getting a brick and mortar space after they realize that the demand is there, which I think is really cool, as opposed to spending all the money and then realizing, oh no, we've made a horrible decision. We can't sustain this.
Well, places like Gato Bisco, there are tons. This is very popular in Atlanta, New York, and Los Angeles in particular. I imagine many other cities as well.
Yeah, yeah. And often the route is this, right? One of these shared kitchens, then maybe a food truck in a lot of those markets, then a brick and mortar if that's successful. You're basically going up a chain now of viability in getting your food out to people. And this ghost kitchen concept, again, from the concept, feels like a great idea that would work for everybody.
Still a significant amount of financial risk, but a far smaller amount of risk than would be associated with, you know, someone saying, it's always been my dream to have a seafood counter, and we're going to make fish sandwiches, and we're just going to hope people like them for the 10 years it takes us to break even. Right.
No, it's true.
It's true. I mean, there's another part here, which is, of course, this makes sense. You're in a... sense, no pun left behind, you're in a prime area fraction of the cost. You don't have to worry not just about the expenses involved with having people sit down at a restaurant, but you also will be able to contract out with these third parties, these facilities that just own that commercial kitchen space, and they will do fulfillment and logistics services. So you can get this dream that a lot of people have quested for in hospitality and restaurant industries. You can just focus on cooking, dude. You don't have to worry about the gripes and the rabble rousers. All you have to do is rent out space at the appropriate facility. In the beginning, people were just renting out straight warehouses that had the right utility hookups. But now you're going to find a place that is like a furnished apartment. You can just move your concept in and they'll have everything you need to function at the scale of a physical restaurant. Your work goes into launching the brand. And by the way, depending on the company, for an added fee, they're happy to help you with that too.
Oh yeah. Are we talking about places like Cloud Kitchen?
We are talking about places like Cloud Kitchen.
And this was new to me, or at the very least this particular company, but even the idea of ghost kitchens being more of a service, because I think initially it was sort of just a concept where a lot of pre-existing places sort of got this, you know, bright idea, perhaps simultaneously. I want to learn more about the, you know, the history of like whose idea this actually was. But the idea of a company that's like, this is what they specialize in, that was sort of like a interesting kind of development for me. I wasn't really aware of this angle.
What's the name of the guy that started this one? Travis Kalanick? Yes. Is that right?
Yeah. Also, he was deep with Uber beforehand. He's a co-founder of Uber.
So one of the brains behind Uber is like, well, let's do something similar here and disrupt the restaurant industry.
Mm-hmm. As long as we hold to our number one priority, not recognizing the rights of the drivers.
Yeah, right? Or paying taxes correctly, but we'll make the drive. Well, oh, sorry. I mean, kitchens. Well, I mean, never mind.
Well, so they're going to pay taxes. What are they, poor people? Anyway, so Cloud Kitchens, you can go to their website right now. Let's talk a little bit about them. According to them, you can get your kitchen up and running in as little as 1 month-ish. So as little as 6 weeks, honestly. And they say, look, we also provide facility management. If you've never been in the restaurant industry, that might sound like a dry term, but dudes, dudettes, and dudoids, listen, that means you can work and you don't have to clean grease traps at the end of the day. You don't have to wipe down fryers. You skip all that messy jazz. You just cook and then you go home.
You're not a chef if you're not cleaning that kitchen.
and that's part of the business model too, is the regimentedness of that and keeping your staff in line and keeping your place spotless or whatever. But this to me sounds a whole lot like a kind of restaurant version of Airbnb, you know, where you get all the privileges of having the space at your disposal, but you don't have to do any of the work. For a price, of course.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, speaking of prices, look at the math for Cloud Kitchen. We're using Cloud Kitchen as one example, but there are multiple entities out there. Cloud Kitchen tells you, the budding chef or restaurateur, that for as little as $30,000 US, you can start your kitchen going in about 6 weeks. And then if everything goes right, in 6 months, you will break even. And that creates a 10% profit with $1 million in total sales. Of course, again, these are ideal conditions. This is a lot like, just to be honest, and this is not a ding on Cloud Kitchen, nor its founder, but this is a lot like saying, hey, if you start running when you're little, you can get the gold medal at the Olympics too. You can, potentially, but not everybody does.
In the end, all of your efforts, no matter what your ghost kitchen is, have to work to hit those metrics, right?
Yes.
Like your marketing has to be spot on to where people using those apps looks at yours and goes, oh, that is the most appealing insert food type here. And then, you know, enough people have to order. Amongst all of the, again, if you're in a place that is really big in these ghost kitchens, that means there's probably a lot of brick and mortar stores around too. And mm-hmm. somehow you got to beat that competition.
Yeah.
I had one quick question though. Like, you know, I made the Airbnb kind of connection, and I'm not sure if I'm missing something here, but is Cloud Kitchens, that these are all facilities they own and operate, or are they connecting budding chefs with available space in potential other ghost kitchens that are run by other individuals?
Largely the former. Okay. O&O spaces. They also, I mean, it just makes sense, and it could be a really great opportunity for a budding chef, again, because restaurants are cutthroat business, razor-thin margins, a lot of plagiarism occurring. Any legal edge is an enormous mission-critical advantage to everyone involved, including, potentially, you, the customer.
You're right, man. I'm thinking of these places called Salon Lofts in Atlanta. Have you ever heard of these?
Yeah, is that where you, like, I see it a lot in cosmetology. You can rent out a space inside a larger space and you pay them rent.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. That's to me, that's a one-to-one to that, where you've got kitchens in a facility, right, where you rent your kitchen within their big thing.
Oh, there's a place in East Atlanta Village here that's sort of called, I forget what the official title is, but it's like Buford Highway and EAV or something like that. And Buford Highway is this area of Atlanta that's got a lot of amazing Asian restaurants and Latin restaurants and all kinds of different cuisine. But this place, it's got like five or six different rotating, that sort of like are there until they move on, but it's in one giant space. Clearly, they're renting their little corner of it, almost like you would a table at a flea market or like a, you know, an artist's market or something. You know,
like a food hall.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Yeah. So I think the example there with the pre-furnished apartment in a nice part of town, that works really well. And these other examples, the salon collective also makes a lot of sense. This is just good business. In the case of these ghost kitchens, business is still booming. Cloud Kitchens alone, per their website, has four separate facilities, O&Os, in the Atlanta area. Surprise, by the way, in the interest of full transparency, recently Cloud Kitchen has had some pretty big problems as they exploded at the start of the pandemic, but now as of September of 2023, they've been laying off a lot of staff. They've been shuttering warehouse locations because, just like ghost kitchens, a lot of businesses that sprang up in the environment of the pandemic are now struggling to function with more and more people, you know, going back to work, hopping back in their cars, going out and frolicking.
Yeah, well, it's crazy to think they had a valuation of $15 billion in 2021 because that pandemic state of mind and reality that we were in, they were like, oh, this is the new thing. This is the future. It will always be like this, and it will only grow from here. And it's just changed a lot.
Mm-hmm. And the next question is, who is using ghost kitchens? Are they, as I had hoped when we started researching this, are they kitchens populated by ghosts? We'll tell you after a word from our sponsor.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This episode is brought to you by Terminix.
Terminix can't help you solve the world's biggest mysteries or take on alien life.
At least not the ones you're thinking of. But they can help take care of pesky invaders in your home.
Like the ants in your kitchen, the roaches under your sink, and the termites in the walls.
Because when pests show up, so does Terminix.
No matter what type of pest it is, they can Terminix it fast with personalized pest care that puts you in control.
Their expertly trained technicians may not know true crime, but they know their local pest pressures.
And with customized plans tailored to your specific situation, you get everything you need to not just get pests out, but keep them out for good.
Between their speedy service, caring technicians, and over 95 years of experience, it's no mystery why they're trusted by homes and businesses everywhere.
So if you have a pest problem, don't stress it. Terminix it.
Visit Terminix.com to book your appointment online today.
That's TERMINIX.com to book online today.
And we've returned. As far as we know, all the staff of ghost kitchens are in fact human beings, which means they're haunted houses with a ghost inside them. So, sort of.
You mean the human being is the haunted house?
Yes. Got it. Yeah. Every human being's a haunted house is the argument. But the thing is, like, if you think about who uses ghost kitchens, if you like, we had a nice sample size of three here, I think, without checking with our pal Mission Control. We've got some folks who are ordering out once a week, maybe twice a week. We've got some folks who pretty much avoid it unless time runs against us. But if you're a person who, for one reason or another, uses an online service like this, unless you know for sure the restaurant you're ordering from, you quite possibly have given business to a ghost kitchen. There's nothing wrong with it. You're one of the people using them.
And so the ghost kitchens, as we've sort of, you know, mentioned already, their biggest customers are going to be these aspiring chefs and folks that are trying to break into the restaurant business. People that have a vision, perhaps they've got some sort of brand they're establishing. That's hugely important. Just like you mentioned with the Savor conversation, Matt, about the wine labels and all of that. I mean, this stuff is huge and it can really have an effect on the way that your taste buds perceive this stuff. But what are some other examples of folks that would benefit from this kind of model? Guys, I distinctly remember sitting with the two of you in our favorite restaurant, Dave & Buster's, and we were looking online. We were talking about something called Mr. Beast Burger, and we were looking at their website, and we noticed that all of a sudden we had just heard about this thing. They had 60 locations listed, like as though they were brick and mortar places. And this was before we knew much about ghost kitchens. This is a relatively new phenomenon. It wasn't like top of mind. And we were like, what the hell is going on here? I know this Mr. Beast guy's got a lot of money, YouTube money, but this seems out of the realm of possibility for anyone, even with like superpowers.
Mm, yeah. One of the big third bucket of ghost kitchen customers is going to be thanks for the edit here, Paul. Celebrities love a ghost kitchen. And you're right, Noel. I appreciate bringing up Dave & Buster's in any context, by the way. Mr. Beast, back in 2021, street name Jimmy Donaldson, he announced that he opened 300 restaurants across America, caveating, we only serve people through delivery apps. And I remember checking this out with you guys because Mr. Beast, the Mr. Beast burger, it mainstreamed public awareness of ghost kitchens. For anybody who is not familiar with Mr. Beast, the guy and his team are famous throughout YouTube and therefore the world for conducting these amazing, I don't know, stunts, right? Sometimes pranks, like staging a fake bank robbery that ends up with giving someone a really nice gift at the end. Wholesome stuff, usually. And New York Times writes about it. This mainstreams ghost kitchens. And they say, they put the relationship this way. They say in exchange for a cut of sales, the brand, in this case, Mr. Beast, supplies the name, the logo, the menu, the recipes, and the PR images for any restaurant owner with the space and the staff to just make some burgers on the side. So So Mr. Beast Burger became a little bit like an anonymous collective of food. You know, it's a Wendy's one day, Wendy's franchise one day, and then later they're also processing Mr. Beast Burger orders.
Well, and to the point I think we mentioned early in the episode of the kind of scenario with the person getting the Chuck E. Cheese delivery and the driver being like, well, they had this window. I was watching some YouTube kind of exposés or little news pieces about this stuff, and a lot of these places have like 10 different little sticker things outside of their windows. I get, maybe that's the law. I don't know. Maybe it's just a style thing, but it's an odd look, isn't it?
And, yeah, I think it's just to let the delivery drivers know, oh, you are in the right place. Like, right. I know this is confusing, but you're here.
It's a hell of a lot cheaper than a sign, having it printed and installed.
Look, I like it. I'm all about that stuff. And, you know, regardless of how you may feel about places like Grubhub and DoorDash and Uber, the problems with those places are the systems, right, in which they operate. The problem is, just like when you call a big company on the phone, the person who is delivering the food is not, should not be the subject of your ire, right? Because they're not the ones making those decisions.
Yeah. I will say this is very hard for me to stomach, in some ways, because I'm imagining... Okay, let's just use an example. You guys know a Whopper. Everybody knows a Burger King Whopper, right? A Burger King Whopper is only that because it is the same ingredients at every Burger King, right? And prepared with the same instructions that are at every Burger King.
Flame broiled, though, Matt. Flame broiled.
But what I mean is, for these ghost kitchens, it's essentially the same thing, right? The same ingredients are being delivered to, in a Mr. Beast example here, it's like to various restaurant kitchens, right? Mm-hmm. That are operating.
Well, and more importantly, the packaging is all from Mr. Beast Burger. You know what I mean? Like, you get these boxes. We ordered, my kid, just as a goof, which is a Mr. Beast fan, we ordered it once and it was fine. But the novelty of it was that we were ordering fast food delivery from this YouTube star's fake restaurant.
Yes, but I guess just my point is, it with Mr. Beast, it's like various different fast food chains. It's like good kitchens, right?
Oh, sure.
Like Buca de Beppo or is that
in Midvale, Utah? Yeah, that's one example.
But it's standardized, and if they do it right, and the kitchens are clean, and people know what they're doing, the food should be identical. Is what you're saying, right?
It should be. Yeah. But just imagine the chefs working at a Buca de Beppo are making it, or is it a separate one or two staff members that Mr. Beast is hiring?
I have that question as well.
Beast is not hiring them. It's a restaurant agreement, but I see your point, because it leads us to interrogate the concept of consistency, right? And that depends upon the restaurants getting very, very specific step-by-step instructions. It's also hilarious to me to think that you could go into that Buca de Beppo and you know they're cooking the burgers, but you can't order them, not at the place. So the division seems sort of artificial. There's also another thing we see, like the importance of branding and public perception. McDonald's has been making a killing with celebrity-sponsored meals. It's still a Big Mac, or it's still a Big Mac meal, but now it's got BTS packaging slapped on it, the famous K-pop band, right? Or Rick and Morty Szechuan sauce, and people
Travis Scott
lose
one,
their mind over this stuff. Yeah. Yeah, and that's what the company that partnered with Mr. Beast sought to do. Their name is Virtual Dining Concepts, VDC, and they said, okay, this Mr. Beast thing is really good for us. Let's partner with Mario Lopez. Let's from Saved by the Bell, and let's partner with a guy named Pauly D. People in the conference room said, who the heck is Pauly D? And
from the shore,
he's from the shore. And they said, what's the shore? He was like, the Jersey Shore. And who knows if they know that's a reality show or if they thought this guy was just big news on the boardwalk of the Garden State.
They thought they were talking about Paul Deccant, just styling on it.
Right, right. In a different life. DBA, Paul Mission Control Deccant, DBA is Pauly D. It all worked out. As Kurt Vonnegut once said, everything was beautiful and nothing hurt. Kidding. Matt, your point was astute. Mr. Beast had a problem with the quality. Mr. Beast sued VDC eventually to stop production of Mr. Beast burgers entirely. They said this virtual dining concept thing, they're more focused on expanding their business so they can pitch to other celebrities. That's what they want to be their primary model. And they're not paying attention to the quality of the food. They're just getting the bag and then ditching town.
Well, yeah, but did you hear VDC's response to Mr. Beast's attorneys?
Yeah.
They were essentially like, actually, we didn't want to continue on with the contract with Mr. Beast, and that's why he's upset, and that's why he's suing, so we're countersuing. Wait,
so what's the truth, though? Because I heard kind of both of those, but it sounded to me, so right, to your point, maybe Mr. Beast was just doing a spin on it, but do you guys have a sense of which version is true?
I'll let the courts decide. Noel.
Fair enough.
Yeah, it might be something for the courts. The winners in this case are going to be the legal teams because both sides here have some financial heft. So we don't know how that will work out. A breached contract argument is nothing new in the business world, but we know this is not all pipe dreams and angel farts. We've seen some companies overexpanding. We've seen bad blood happen between so-called creatives and ghost kitchen initiatives. But one thing's for sure, ghost kitchens are a reality. I don't love the phrase, but they might be the new normal. They've fundamentally transformed the course of the restaurant industry. I did not know this, but you know, there's a legend in the ghost kitchen game. IHOP, you guys. IHOP is gargantuan in the world of ghost kitchens.
That makes so much sense. They can make anything at an IHOP.
Their menus are, they roll deep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They make crepes, for God's sake. Crepes.
This is just a tangent here because we're a little looser at the end of the year. But did I tell you guys about Denny's in Japan? Like, you guys know Denny's.
Do they have Moons Over Miami, or is it called something different?
It is crazy. Okay, first off, it's one of the only places that has free refills, which is very much an American thing. So that alone is a huge sale.
So also, ice, apparently. Yeah, also, a bit of an American thing.
Also, it's a huge it's a huge step up. It's a much nicer restaurant. And it's weirdly Italian, by the way. Denny's in Japan, at least. Yeah. And it's like it's a night out on the town kind of place you go to, similar to how PBR, Pabst Blue Ribbon, is considered a fancy beer in parts of China. And it comes in a whole different, like, it comes in like a wine bottle. It's quite expensive. And
a lot of the beers come in kind of wine bottles over in Japan and China, I've noticed. Mm-hmm. I've seen it in films anyway.
Yeah. And look, we're not going to disparage the good folks at Denny's, nor PBR, because it is an award-winning beer, I guess, technically, right? They named it after the Blue Ribbon.
Won it that one time, at the very least.
Mm-hmm.
For a couple of last thoughts on my end, I was just wondering, do you guys think that we've already reached kind of peak ghost kitchen, and now the term is sort of a neg?
No.
You don't think so? Because to me, in culinary circles, if you find out something's coming from a ghost kitchen, then that sort of, I think it sort of carries with it a bit of a blotch on the reputation of the food because of all the things we're talking about. But maybe I'm misperceiving.
I mean, it's perspective, right? Just that, like, for one, I don't know if this is helpful, but in the early days of baseball, it was considered cheating to use a glove to catch the ball. And now that's normal. I think what we're seeing is a process of normalization.
I think it depends on the situation too, right? If it's one of those up and coming folks that we're talking about, that's one thing. But if it's Chuck E. Cheese trying to trick you into buying their crappy pizza, that's another thing.
I'm no economist, but I do think we're in a retraction from something that was catching on because it was so economically viable. Now it's customers going through a process of getting used to it. Right. And once we're used to it enough, I think this is just what it's going to be. Because, if we look at what we studied on this show about real estate and commercial real estate, right, and like how expensive that is and how running a brick and mortar in the long run at this point, it's probably going to become less and less of a viable thing. It's already really difficult. It's going to get harder and harder and harder. But then having one big, massive kitchen where you know, hundreds, if not thousands of delivery drivers show up to every day. That's like somewhere centrally located in a city. Like, how is that not going to be a thing, you guys?
Right. I would argue that what we're seeing as well is a democratization of restaurants through technology, of ownership through technology. For someone starting out, this process is way less intimidating than having to buy out a piece of real estate, make friends with someone for millions of dollars, and then just hope you guys get along for the foreseeable future. But it's also dependent, insidiously, inseparably so, on the concept of third-party delivery apps. And each of those has a troubled history when it comes to workers' rights, fair practices with partner restaurants, and customer satisfaction. I mean, I think this is something that we dive into with your help, Conspiracy Realist, in future episodes. I do have one last note for everybody wondering. You heard about the world's first pizza delivery, and you, like us, probably thought, well, did King Umberto tip on the world's first pizza delivery? That and many other aspects of this story remain the stuff they don't want you to know. I can't wait to hear what you think, folks. Matt, Noel, I am going to guess that a couple of people listening to the show this evening might be driving for DoorDash or Grubhub or Uber Eats as they listen tonight. So it'd be amazing to hear some firsthand experiences with this.
100%. And you can send us those firsthand experiences in all kinds of ways. First, you can send it to us online via social media, where we are Conspiracy Stuff on X, Facebook, and YouTube. Also, be looking for some really fun YouTube content coming in the very near future. You can also find YouTube Shorts that we're already putting out there. And on Instagram and TikTok, find our videos at Conspiracy Stuff Show.
Hey, if you want to call us and tell us about your experience with a ghost kitchen parking situation, because we read some stories in the news about how crazy the parking is around some of these hubs, right? Call us and tell us with your stories. Our number is 1-833-STDWYTK. When you do call in, give yourself a cool nickname, and then you got 3 minutes, say whatever you'd like. Just please, please, please let us know if we can use your name and message on the air. If you've got more to say than can fit in that 3 minutes, why not instead shoot us an email?
That's right. Send us a good old-fashioned email. Give us those clips. Give us those pictures. Give us the links. Take us to the edge of the rabbit hole. We'll do the rest. We read every note we get at conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cash back on purchases. And pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.